from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a basketball court in Miami. That's where Mario Moran accepted his national championship medal alongside his team, the Miami Heat Wheels. The wheelchair basketball team won the national championship in 2015, the first time in its team's history. And for Mario, the victory came after a tragedy. He was shot during a fight in his New Jersey hometown, leaving him with a spinal cord injury. He uses a wheelchair to get around, and he moved to Miami and joined a spinal cord injury support group. That's where he heard about the Miami Heat Wheels and found a new beginning. Moran's story is featured in the documentary The Rebound, which will be screened tonight at the Little Theater. It spotlights the challenges that adaptive athletes face, the misconceptions they aim to overcome, and it highlights their successes. And can I just tell you, they are incredible athletes. Oh my goodness gracious. You see the strength and what they are doing on the court? Really amazing. Looking locally, 1 in 8 people in Monroe County have some form of disability. And according to the CDC, nearly half of adults age 18 to 64 with disabilities do not get aerobic physical activity. This hour, we'll discuss how local organizations are helping to improve those numbers by offering opportunities in adaptive sports. Yep, like wheelchair basketball, but also adaptive skiing and a lot more. And it's part of our Dialogue on Disability Week, a partnership between WXXI and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series. I'd like to welcome our guest for the hour. Michael Cokewhite is back as supervisor of Sportsnet. Mike, welcome back to the program. Good to have you.
Thank you.
Jen Truscott is here. She's an alpine skier and has got a great story to share with us. Jen, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Dave Grace is here. Dave is a sled hockey athlete that's really not fair, Dave. You're an athlete in, I don't know, like a dozen sports we were talking before the hour, something like that?
Well, you know what? I don't know if I'm an athlete, but I'm a participant.
Oh, okay, participant. I'm going to say you're an athlete.
Okay.
Is that all right with you? So they're here because they have stories to share, the kinds of stories that you will see in the various people profiled in the movie The Rebound. That's tonight. By the way, it's free tonight at 6:30 at the Little Theater. It's only about a 75-minute film, and the director of the film, The Rebound, will do a Skype Q&A following the screening. It is remarkably well done, very well produced, very well shot, and I think a movie that will help you see what these are. Definitely great athletes. No offense to Dave, these guys are even better athletes than you. I will tell you that.
I'm sure.
They're way better than me. They are just amazing. So that's tonight at 6:30. And Michael Cokewhite, I imagine that's a story that, it's cool to see the national champion wheelchair basketball team, but there are great athletes in adaptive sports right here, aren't there?
We have a ton of phenomenal athletes here in Rochester in the adaptive sports world, both in wheelchair sports and other areas as well. And a lot of people that's not necessarily were born with those disabilities, those challenges, have faced it later in life. And we'll talk to some of these athletes that have faced that. But there's just a ton of great opportunities in Rochester. And Sportsnet's big mission this year, 2018, we're trying to pull people out of the house, get them out, get them active. How can we get them connected to these opportunities and to meet these athletes and learn from them?
I read that stat. I'll read it again. According to the CDC, nearly half of adults between the ages of 18 and 64 with disabilities do not get aerobic physical activity. And I wonder, and we'll talk about this more in this hour, if that's because there is an assumption, particularly when it comes with a life change, a diagnosis or an injury, that that's no longer available, that's no longer an option. What do you think?
For sure. We hear a lot of that. And really, the phone calls we get, we're always surprised about is, what can I do? What can my child do? And not, do you have a program for this? We say, well, what do you want to do? You know, there's so many opportunities in Rochester, not only through the Al Siegel Community Agencies, but through Rochester Accessible Adventures. There's adaptive recreation opportunities, all kinds of places. And I think that people aren't aware of those opportunities. We're so thankful to be here to promote those.
So, Jen, you're an alpine skier.
Yes.
And I want to talk about, you know, your life growing up and your skiing background, because I know it's filled with a lot of accomplishment. Take me through that.
I grew up, I learned how to ski as a young child and skied recreational for quite some time. And then...
Where'd you grow up, by the way?
I grew up partly in Utah, partly in Skaneateles, mm-hmm, New York. Mm-hmm. And so I started racing when I was, I don't know, eighth grade, and continued to race and ended up racing for a college team as well. And that was really my first love of life, is honestly being on top of a mountain in the nice blue skies and beautiful day. It just brings so much joy to myself.
Going how fast?
I was a downhill racer, so I've gone up to 60 miles an hour. before?
Before you go any further, I have to ask you this, because whenever I watch the Winter Olympic sports and I see, sometimes I see a ski jumper, sometimes I see the downhill where it looks like they're going straight down a sheet of ice. And I always think to myself, at some point, they did that for the first time.
Yes.
You know, so it's one thing to do it after many, many times and many, many years. You got to do that for the first time at some point.
Right.
How?
I think you build up to it. And so you've gone fast and you've done shorter lengths of time. And then you just, honestly, you build up to that. And you have so much confidence in your skiing ability that you have confidence that
you can do it. Do you have any memories of like the first time at a big, big mountain or going, well, this is it?
Yep. And I was at Gore Mountain in the Adirondacks. And it was a downhill. And when you are in a downhill, your skis actually start swimming on you. And so they kind of check back and forth because you don't want to put an edge into it. And I remember just feeling like I had to hang on for dear life to make it through. So till I got to the turn and I could edge the ski a little bit.
Did you stay up?
Of course.
Well, I like the answers, of course. Is it an amazing rush?
It's a great rush. And I think when you do any kind of adventurous sport, I played lacrosse, I played skiing, I rock climbed. I think I water skied as well. I think when you're doing something adventurous, you get a rush.
Did you ever fall?
Yes.
Also, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Do you learn how to fall like without getting hurt as best you can?
Yes. Yeah, and so you're just trying to slide down versus bounce down.
I mean, it's just, I mean, in the Tour de France or in bicycling, I mean, collarbone injuries are common with falls, but they learn how to try to fall and not break bones.
And we're trying to learn how to fall and not twist a knee.
Oh, wow. So you were competitive and you were very good.
Right, I was. And it was something, I think everybody enjoys being good at something. And so that was a really big blessing for me to be able to excel at something. And I just had so many life experiences around. My family still laughs because if it's by a ski hill, I've probably been there.
And what was it like in college? How'd you do in college?
In college, it was good. I ended up, I wasn't able to ski all 4 years because I ended up breaking my back. But besides that, it was a great experience.
Did you break your back skiing?
Yes.
I'm so sorry. My gosh. and then take me to post-college and what happened in the ensuing years then.
In the ensuing years, my husband and I came to Rochester. He went to RIT. And I was so excited to be back on the mountain. And so I went down and started at Bristol and became a ski instructor. Mm-hmm. And then started coaching their race teams down there.
How'd you like that?
It was great. Again, it's just part of, for me, part of my DNA will always be skiing and being on the mountain. It's just connected to so much of who I am. And so it just felt like home. And I think that's the difference, is that ability to feel like home and in a zone that you feel comfortable with.
So tell us what happened in 2001.
In 2001, I was diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis, and I was diagnosed that way because I had gone blind in my eye, and I couldn't see, and I had had, so I had MRIs, and they were able to find that indeed I did have multiple sclerosis. I continued to work all the way up till 2009. I had to end activities probably back in about 2004, 2005. I wasn't able to do any activities. My body just wouldn't sustain that. And so I spent a lot of time. In 2009, I had to stop working altogether. My MS had gotten to the point that I'd had physical damage as well as cognitive damage. And so I could no longer hold down a job. And so I had a 2-year-old at home, and I spent most of my time just involved with her and trying to find something to replace the life that I had had before.
Do you remember in the 2001 diagnosis how much you thought about, you know, life on the mountain and if that was going to change at that diagnosis?
For me, I wanted to stay as active as possible mm-hmm. for as long as possible. And so even at that time with MS, they weren't encouraging active lifestyle. That has changed now, and now they're realizing that an active lifestyle is very beneficial. But at the time, they hadn't gotten to that. But I couldn't, you know, not do it. And in fact, I think my MS stayed as well as it did and for as long as it did because I had some muscle structure left. So I was able to adapt and kind of coordinate.
What a great lesson. But were you scared about the future?
I was very apprehensive about the future because I knew at some point in my life that it would change drastically. And I had just always hoped that it would be later in life instead of sooner in life. And it just happened for me to be sooner rather than later.
So 2009, you stopped working.
Mm-hmm.
But forgive me, it's 9 years later. I'm looking at you. You look like you could be a downhill skier. And you are. I mean, I'm just trying to understand what has changed in the ensuing years.
Yeah. Like I said, so you have ebbs and flows with relapsing, remitting.
Okay.
I spent from 2000 probably 10, 12, and 13, I probably spent most of my time on the couch with very, very difficult and very strong fatigue. And also I have huge weakness on my right side between my right. Yeah. So I spent a lot of time just on the couch wishing that I had something that I could do that I enjoy.
And how did that change then?
What changed for me is I saw a documentary on Jimmy Huga, and he was an Olympic downhill racer, and he was also diagnosed with MS. And he started a program called the MS Can Do, and he talked about creating and adapting yourself so that you can be as active as possible. And I had never even thought about that because I didn't feel like I couldn't do the things that I had once done, and so I just didn't do them at all. And it just made me change my mindset that I could adapt and be able to still take part in these activities.
Was it someone who knew you, who wanted you to see the document? Because it sounds like the documentary, you must have been looking at this thinking, that's me.
That's me, exactly. And it finally clicked for myself. Like, I had spent so many years, and I had just been told, find something new that you enjoy. Find something new. And I would just sit there trying to find different things to do, you know, on the couch, and it wasn't as fulfilling.
And so what are you able to do now, and how has that gone?
Honestly, just this past couple weeks, I learned how to do my adaptive sit ski all by myself. That's a huge accomplishment. I've been working 4 years up until that, till now, to be able to do that. So that's a huge accomplishment for me. I have started physical therapy in the last couple years, and the skiing has given me motivation to try to get my body as healthy as possible. And so I think that's been, changed my perspective all around. I used to use Wegmans personal shopping because I couldn't walk around the grocery store all by myself. I wouldn't be able to make it through, and now I can make it through the grocery store. I know that sounds probably mundane for some people, but if that tells you where my health was.
I don't think that sounds mundane at all. And I think that's wonderful to hear. And you think that's related to your desire to keep moving forward with skiing again?
Exactly. I think that it really, for me, changed my perspective back on life. It brought joy back and enrichment back into my life. I was quite depressed before that because I just thought this is my next 40 years is just going to be sitting on the couch. And it was just very depressing to feel like there was nothing enriching in my life that I could do after being such an active person.
What are your goals now?
My goals now are to continue and get better on my sit ski. It's also to look for some activities in the summertime that I can enjoy as well.
Sit ski, I mean, I certainly can envision it, but can you tell us, the listeners, a little bit more about how it works?
So a sit ski is basically a metal chair attached to skis. Mm-hmm. And the best part about it is that you are locked into it. So if you're a skier, you think of your ski boots, and your foot gets locked into the ski boot, and then you're able to move the skis. And so what happens in the sit ski is that you, as the participant, are actually in this chair, and you're strapped in. And then when you have fine movements with your body, they're able to move then the skis.
But you're not going to lose the ski in the mountain?
You're not going to lose the ski. You are attached.
You had to have lost a ski somewhere on a high mountain going at a fast speed at some point.
Yes, I haven't with the sit ski yet.
That has to be the worst. You're going like 58 miles an hour and you go, okay, I have no idea where the ski is.
Yeah. Exactly.
How are we going to find it? And where are you doing this, by the way?
We're doing this down at Swain with Shared Skiing Solutions. I am so grateful for that organization. It helps all people with disabilities, and I think that that has been such a game changer in my day-to-day life.
How often are you able to do it now?
We can do it once a week on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm. Amazing story, Jen. And Michael, how much does this kind of line up with everybody's story is different, but how often are you hearing stories like this?
Well, sure. For example, Shared Ski Adventures is under Sportsnet. We have 25 people this year, which is the max we can take in the program. That's just the skiing stories. We've also now had to open that up because we had so many people wanting to ski that we opened it up to Powder Mill and Northampton Park. We do youth programs there using the rope tows. So people don't drive all the way to Swain just to be on the Bunny Hill. We can teach and build that love of skiing from a young age right here in Rochester. And so now we have over 30 people in the program. That's one of 17 programs. And we're not even close to touching the population that's needed out there. And that's my big point, is that we're doing the best we can, but there's lots of other opportunities and there's lots of growth potential. And there's just so many stories of people that want to get out there, they want to be active, and just don't think that's a possibility, but it is.
How can you grow then?
So we're working very closely with the LC Community of Agency, a lot of funding opportunities there. But most of our funding comes from private donations, people that hear the stories like Jen's, they get excited about it, they say we want to help and grow those. We're also working closely with different colleges and universities on how do we train the physical education teachers to better work with that with the College of Brockport, our physical therapists to be knowledgeable about these opportunities. So instead of we're doing these exercises to get you better, maybe we're doing these exercises to get you better as an athlete and help those motivations too.
You're hearing Michael Cokewhite, who is supervisor of Sportsnet. Online where can people find you?
SportsnetNY.org.
All right, you learn a lot more about what they're doing there. And you just heard Jen Truscott's story. She's an alpine skier, grew up a very, very good skier, and now skiing again. And it's a great story. Dave Grace is here, who is an athlete and a participant in a number of sports, also kind of grew up in playing and participating in a lot of different sports. So let's go back to growing up for you. So what were your favorite activities, sports, et cetera, growing up?
As a child or growing up, baseball was my first love. Other than the outdoors, I was an avid hunter, fisher, trapper, and I also wrestled. I was on the swim team. I enjoyed hockey. I enjoyed lacrosse, mainly box lacrosse, indoor lacrosse. Mm-hmm. As a side note, go Hawks. That's about it, I would say. Skiing. I love skiing.
That's it, he says. And you're a father of five?
I am. Father of five. Been married for 40-some years. I'm going to say 43, but my wife will correct me when I go home.
Oh, you've got to know that, Dave.
You'd think, wouldn't you?
I was promised there'd be no math, so I'm with you there. Okay. But with five kids, it forced you to continue to stay active, I guess, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and all my kids played sports. My daughter was won a scholarship and played for MCC. They won a national championship in softball. She did very well for herself. My kids were raised and went to school in Honeoy. They were all very good athletes, and that kept me on my toes.
What happened 12 years ago?
12 years ago, I was climbing into my tree stand. I slipped, and I fell 20 feet back to the ground. And I broke my back. I broke it at the T4 level. I'm a T4 complete, which means that from the nipples down, I have nothing. However, I have full use of my shoulders and my arms. So life changed significantly for me.
I don't want to dwell too much on the accident itself, but, I mean, did you know at that moment just how severe? I mean, can you tell in a fall like that?
Well, you know what? I always thought that when I came to, as you can tell, I was knocked unconscious.
Okay.
That I would check my fingers and my toes to take inventory. I didn't have to do that. For some reason, I knew right off the bat that I had broken my back. And one of the, bad things about it was I was in a remote area of Springwater. I had no cell service. And so I lay there for 6 hours before I was able to finally think to call 911. I kept trying to call my wife, called 911, and that went through the very first time. And they sent the helicopter out and rushed me to Strong.
Wow. There was a pretty clear early on that life had permanently changed. I mean, did you have any thoughts in those early days that, you know, it could be temporary in any way?
No thoughts.
Yeah.
Basically, because it was complete, my injury wasn't going to get any worse. However, it wasn't going to get any better either. And I just made peace with it. And, you know, I have a deep faith, and my Lord and Savior Jesus has given me the will to go on. And I'll tell you what, I haven't looked back one second.
What an amazing perspective. That really is remarkable, Dave. And by the way, you heard Dave mention breaking his back. Obviously, it's very different than Jen's back break. Jen, you just want to share?
Oh, it was just the vertebrae broke off the spinal cord. So for mine, it's just fused together.
It's probably the first time she said it was just the vertebrae breaking off the spinal cord. But are you decently healthy in
that
department today?
Yep.
Okay, so very different. And so that was Dave's situation. Your perspective was remarkable in accepting it. But I still wonder, given how active you were your entire life, whether it was growing up yourself, the activities you enjoyed on your own with your children, did you think, well, that's all done now, or did you think, eventually I can figure out a way to be more active?
Well, you know what? It came in stages. I'm going to say the first week I was in the hospital, and this is a little bit outside the scope of this, I was contacted by the New York State Bow Hunters, which I'm a life member of, and said, Dave, we want to get you back in the field. And it was, you know, different steps like that. I have a brother-in-law who lives in, not a brother-in-law, a son-in-law that lives in Buffalo, and he's an able-bodied person, but he plays sled hockey because able-bodied people can play sled hockey. And he said, Dave, have you thought about playing sled hockey? I didn't even know what sled hockey was. Shared skiing. I heard about it somehow, maybe through Michael. And you know what? I was a skier before. I wasn't a downhill skier. I wasn't a competitor. But
sure,
I was an expert at falling. I enlisted in the shared ski program. And I'll tell you what, that's probably the biggest rush I've had since I've been in a wheelchair, is going down the hill. Now I'll have people, I'm tethered to able-bodied skiers behind me, but going down that hill on this wheelchair on a ski, it's exhilarating, I'll tell you that much, that's for sure.
What else do you do? So what's your schedule in terms of physical activity? How much are you able to do now? How often?
Well, I'll get out as much as I can. I'm retired. I'm retired from Kodak. I spent 34 years right across the street at Kodak office. But for instance, just to give you an idea, I run a trap line every single morning. Rain or shine, doesn't care. I don't care if it's 10 below or not. I was on the ice. I was on Canisius Lake ice fishing all day yesterday. Those aren't team sports, but mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, you get a lot of exercise.
Oh, I certainly imagine.
I show up to the sled hockey practices that we have here in Rochester. I played for Buffalo for a while until the drive to Buffalo got a little bit old, so I only play for Rochester now. During the warm months, I enjoyed hand cycling. And now I'm 63 years old. For my 60th birthday, I rode my bike from Rochester to Buffalo, and that's using just my arms and shoulders. So I thought that was significant. So for those folks that ride the couch and say, woe is me, you know, I ride a wheelchair and there isn't any life for me after this. There certainly is. There's all kinds of things you can do. I'm busy every single day. And there.
Arms and shoulders to bicycle from Rochester to Buffalo. You've got to be a pretty strong guy, honestly.
Yes. for my arms and shoulders. Everything else, I'm pretty weak.
Well, sure, but your arms and shoulders, and the reason I say that, Dave, is having watched this film on wheelchair basketball, the upper body strength of wheelchair basketball athletes blew me away. Just amazing, the power, the strength. They show some of these guys training, and they are doing these pull-ups in their chairs and just putting everybody to shame. You have to, right? I mean, you don't have use of anything chest down, so.
That's right. We get a lot of exercise on our arms and our shoulders.
Are you sort of in the best shape of your life in your arms and shoulders? It's got to be close.
As far as that goes, yes.
At 63.
Yes.
What a story. Michael, what would you say about Dave's story? I mean, for me, I'm first struck by the response to the injury and just how much grace Dave Grith showed with it. But truly, there's that, because he had an amazing attitude and perspective on it right away. And that openness to accepting it also opened him up to other opportunities, it seemed like.
I think that perspective is pretty rare from what I see in the field and the hundreds of families and individuals I work with. But it just allowed things to happen much quicker for Dave to see all the things that he does. And that drive to continue to be active and continue those activities was what I think probably pulled you through, right?
It's a big help, yes. And it gives me the exercise I need. You know, sitting in a wheelchair, you don't get the exercise you need. And you have to make the exercise. I'm in a manual wheelchair, and when I'm in a parking lot, people will ask if I'd like to be pushed. I don't want to be pushed because I need the exercise. That's what sled hockey does for me. You know what? I love to be competitive, but I love the exercise it gives me more than that.
You mentioned sled hockey a few times. Can you describe it a little bit more for our listeners who haven't seen it?
Sure. You sit on a bucket with your legs stretched out in front of you, and you have an ice skate underneath your butt. Either one or two. There's really two blades underneath your butt. And you have picks in each of your hands. On one end of the stick is an ice pick. On the other end is a curved hockey blade. And you skate down the ice by just propelling yourself with those picks. And you play ice hockey the same as you would regular hockey, only you're sitting on your skates rather than having your skates on your feet.
What's the hardest part of it?
Puck handling. Mm-hmm. Puck handling is probably the hardest part.
And tell me again, before your injury 12 years ago, did you play ice hockey? Did you skate?
Yes.
You did skate?
Yes.
Because okay. That, for me, was always the hardest thing, is getting on skates. Obviously, it's very different than when you have paralysis, but puck handling then, just getting used to the movement there.
Yes.
Are you pretty good?
No. But you know what? I'm 63 years old, and I don't want to use it as an excuse, but you'll see that depending on your level of injury, that dictates how well you can become also. But I can try as hard as the next guy can, and I can exert myself as hard as the next guy can. And I can enjoy the sport without being at the top of the sport.
Are you competitive, though? And I ask not because, again, you're acknowledging some of your shortcomings in sled hockey, but are you out there saying, you know, I'm here. I want to win. I want to play as seriously as I can. Or are you not generally a pretty competitive guy?
No, I'm competitive. Yeah. I want to play as hard as I can. I want to win. And fortunately, there's different levels of sled hockey. You can be just like with softball. You can have A class teams all the way down to C or D class teams. And I'm in a lower level team, but for our level, we're competitive.
The reason I ask that, Michael Coquette, is because I think there is maybe a general idea that when someone has an injury, a paralysis, a change in physical ability or a disability, that, well, just participating is sort of, and so for some, I'm sure, it's just the idea of doing it again is great.
Sure.
But there are some people who are very competitive, who want to play any of the sports, whether it's sled hockey, basketball, other things, very competitively. And sometimes we do see that. And again, I go back to the film The Rebound, which in our second half hour we'll tell you a little bit more about. But for those who want to be competitive, do you meet athletes who maybe had an injury or a diagnosis and they think, I'm never going to have that competitive juice again? But they're wrong, that they can get that competitive juice through adaptive sports.
Well, both of these two here were that when they came to see me at Shared Ski Adventures. They said, I just want to go down the mountain, experience it again. And with some of our sit skis, we can actually have an instructor steer it. Mm-hmm. An able-bodied person would steer from behind. Well, probably 3 weeks in, Jen's instructor, who happened to be my dad, came to me, and the roles reversed because now dad was in trouble. And the two of them had broken one of the skis because they were going so fast they caught air on one of the head walls. And so she got competitive pretty quick. And Dave the same way. He said, I don't think I need this person to hang on anymore. Then all of a sudden I look and here's Dave go, and there's no tension on the lines. He was completely independently skiing that device. So a lot of people, you don't have to go out there with a competitive attitude. And we have some great athletes here, and I wanted to point out that although they have this competitive attitude, you don't have to start with that. And you don't have to start with being on a team. You can just start with being active and trying an activity, and it's going to be different. It's going to be a different style of play. It's going to be different instruments you're using to play that sport. But just give it a shot, and you'd be amazed how you'll develop. And just as everybody starts with a sport and develops into an athlete, it just happens all over again.
Before we get our only break of the hour, I want to ask Dave Grace one more question on that perspective that he shared with us. 12 years ago, at the age of 51, 5 children, a very active life, falls up from a tree stand 20 feet and has paralysis, and seemed to accept it with remarkable, ease is the wrong word, but a willingness to accept it, to not dwell. And Dave, everybody listening has had moments where it's easy to feel like you can turn yourself into a victim, or you can say, woe is me. Everybody goes through a lot. And every one of us who's listening right now can probably think of someone in their life who you feel like consistently sees the downside of things. What do you think the benefit is in refusing to do that to the best you can? Because if anybody had license to do woe is me at the age of 51, knowing how much you had lost physically, it would have been you. What do you think the value is in refusing to take that perspective?
Well, I guess number one is I'm not a victim. And I have two options from what I see. One is I can continue to enjoy life, or I can say, woe is me, and sit on the couch and pout and feel sorry for myself. And I chose to enjoy life. And I don't regret it at all. I have a blast. I have as much fun today, and I'm not just saying this, I have as much fun today as I did before my accident. Absolutely.
Dave Grace is a sled hockey athlete who participates in many winter sports. Jen Truscott is an alpine skier. Michael Coquite is supervisor of Sportsnet. And we're talking about adaptive sports. It's part of our Dialogue on Disability Week, which is a partnership between WXXI and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series. Let's go to our only break of the hour, and we'll come right back and tell you what's going on tonight at the Little Theater with The Rebound. That's next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, some special programming related to live coverage of a news conference at the University of Rochester. You might have heard that the University of Rochester has been investigating claims of sexual harassment that sparked protests on campus, students saying that the administration needs to do more to protect them. Well, on Thursday, we get the release of a report on that. We'll have live coverage for you on Thursday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. During our brief break, Jen Truscott was just making a point about, whether you are a super competitive person or not. It's there's a lot of, I think, a lot to say about the value you have in having this perspective and still being active. Tell me a little bit more about the point you were making during a break.
I think what I was trying to say, and I think what is so important when you look at people with disabilities, is that you look at the ability that you have. And you try to take that and find ways in which you can still participate and strengthen your life and the people around you. And I think that whenever there's, you talk to a regular healthy person, their job probably isn't the most important thing that happens to them in a day, but it's the extracurricular activities that they do. And I think that as a person that that needs an adaptation to their life, it is so much more enriching to be filled with other people, and it gets you out, and it does get you back into a community of people.
Tonight at 6:30 p.m. at the Little Theater, it's the film The Rebound, which is a documentary that follows the underdog journey of the Miami Heat Wheels wheelchair basketball team in their quest for a national championship. Trust me when I tell you, when you watch them play, it's inspiring. It's fun. It's amazing what they're doing. And it gets rough at times. I mean, these guys are really, really devoted competitive athletes. And it's also the story of what they, in sort of individually, player by player, have come up against and dealt with in their lives. And sometimes it's a situation from birth, and sometimes it's a situation later in life. We already told you about one of the athletes on the team who was shot, and that obviously changed his life instantly, but became a wheelchair basketball player. I want to listen to a few clips here, and this is the story of Jeremy, and he's an adaptive athlete from South Florida, Jeremy Thomas. He was born prematurely. I think he was 2.8 pounds when he was born, and he was diagnosed with cerebral palsy and spina bifida due to a prenatal injury. And his single mom and his brother supported aspirations of living an extraordinary life. So in this clip, you're going to hear his mother, Risa Thomas Wisdom, talking about how her son has dealt with these challenges.
I was 5.5 months pregnant with Jeremy, and I was a passenger in my mother's car. She stopped to a stop sign, and the other gentleman did not stop. When it was time for her to go, he blew through the stop sign, and we was hitting the passenger side of the car. I was in the back seat, and I went into premature labor. And I wound up having Jeremy like 5 days after the accident, and he wore 2 pounds, 8.5 ounces. That's my miracle. He stayed in the hospital 51 days. Everything they said he wasn't gonna be able to do, he's able to do it, but he does have spinal bifida and cerebral palsy. But to look at him, you wouldn't think he have anything. Any challenges, he doesn't see himself being handicapped. He's handicapable. We never use the word handicap as a child, and we don't use it in the house now.
That last comment's interesting because in speaking to so many people over the years on this program in our dialogues on disability, you hear varying perspectives on terminology, whether it's disability, handicap, and you heard the mom in this case, Risa Thomas Wisdom, saying they don't like that term, handicap. And I wonder, Dave Grace, are there any terms that you don't prefer, or is it does terminology not matter to you as someone now who has some paralysis?
Personally, terminology does not matter. You know what? I know I'm handicapped. so it doesn't matter. You can call me a cripple. You can call me handicapped. I don't care. I know what I am. And I'm no less of a person for it. I ride around in a wheelchair, but I still enjoy life. I still do everything that most everybody else does, only I do it a little bit differently.
So well said. Jen, what do you think about terminology?
I think terminology, we shouldn't get caught up in that. When I look at my disease, and there are so many people in the community that also have MS, and I think that you look at the outlook of the disease and you realize and come to terms with the devastating effects that it will have on your body eventually. And so you've come to terms with that, and now you need to redirect and redefine who that person is and what you're going to still achieve. And I think that that's the most important thing, is that whenever you're given, whether you're born with it or whether it comes to you later in life, it's a matter of what will you achieve with these new parameters. Hmm.
Michael Cocoy, what do you think?
So as this is my employment, I have to be very careful with the words I use on a day-to-day basis, but I've never met anyone that's offended with what I call whatever. I just use their names, preferably.
Sure.
But yeah, that's why with SportsNet we call it an all-ability approach. And a lot of people think, well, you're trying to be PC. And that's not really the reason. We're cognizant of that. But the reason we say all-ability approach is some people don't consider themselves disabled. And then they feel like, well, I'm not part of that group. I can't participate in that program. I need these adaptations. But, you know, I'm not disabled. I just have, maybe I walk with a cane or something like that. So that's why we use that all-abilities approach. And that's what El Segal really has bonded to, that looking at abilities first.
And by the way, despite maybe a little bit of a different perspective from the mom in that clip, Risa Thomas Wisdom, talking about her son Jeremy and someone like Dave Grace, I think they all have the same attitude, which is our life is our life and we're going to achieve, boy, they certainly do. Let's listen to another clip. This is a different player. This is a Miami Heat Wheels player named Bill. And in this case, he's talking about society's perceptions sometimes of people with disabilities. Let's listen.
I've had so many people in my life since I've been disabled ask me so many different questions. You can't walk at all. You can't have sex. You can't feel anything. We're like train wrecks. Everybody looks. They're curious, but they don't know really how to ask the questions. How do you put people with disabilities in a good light with physical disabilities? Put us out there on the basketball court. Let us bang and knock the hell out of each other. You'll see how tough we are.
All right, I'm going to ask the man in the wheelchair. What do you think about that, Dave?
100% true. You know what? Sled hockey can get rough. and you know what? We dish it out. And you know what? At the end of the game, we shake hands and we go out and have a beer with each other. You know what he says, I agree with 100%.
Do you ever have, I mean, again, you seem like the most immune to any sort of what other people think of maybe anybody I've ever met, Dave, which is really admirable. You know, Bill's talking in that clip too about how sometimes society can say, oh, you know, you're paralyzed, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. And he says sometimes it feels like they're looking at you like you're a train wreck. Then you kind of got to go out and show them. But do you also have that perspective? Do you sense when people are looking at you differently, and does that bother you at all?
Absolutely. You know, people look at me, especially children, if I'm in the store or in the parking lot, you know, a lot of times the children will watch me as I roll by. That's okay, because I am different. and you know what? I guess I don't have to prove myself, but the people that know me understand that, you know what? I'm no less of a person just because I ride a wheelchair.
I think that's, again, beautifully said. Now, so on the flip side of that, are kids with diagnoses, and the question becoming, you know, what can parents do? What can we all do to make sure kids feel growing up, if there's a diagnosis at birth, if there's an injury early in life, that opportunity is there? Because, you know, Dave Grace was 51, and Jen was not quite 51, but a little. You were an adult when you got your MS diagnosis, and you had a chance to try to absorb it and figure out what you're going to do about it. And sometimes, you know, it can be tough for kids. And in this clip, want to talk about, we're going to talk a little bit about parent perspective. So this clip from the film, The Rebound, this is U.S. Paralympian William Hernandez discussing how parents of children with disabilities sometimes keep the kids from participating in adaptive opportunities because they still want to see their kids as, quote, normal. Let's listen.
You get a lot of parents that want to have their child so normal, quote unquote, that they do not need to be doing all these wheelchair sports. There was a kid one time, and we were sitting there kind of demonstrating wheelchair basketball, and we were having kids come around and get into the chairs and see what wheelchair basketball was all about. And I saw this couple come in with their child, and the child was excited. It was like, wow, look at that, look what they're doing. But then in Spanish, she replied and said, you know, of course I understood what she said, but let's go, this is not what you want to do. He's seeing this sport that everyone else that possibly has the same disability, and they're all happy that they're doing this. And she felt that it was, I don't want to see my child. He's not disabled.
Now, Michael Kokwai, this is interesting because in some ways, the parents that William Hernandez is talking about there don't want to concede that there is a physical challenge of some sort that prevents their children from playing what they would call quote unquote normal sports. And that can be hard psychologically. So whether it's adults or kids, or sometimes parents of kids, do you encounter that? Is there a process of working with them saying, you know, this is not lesser than, but this is also reality now?
Absolutely. We see a lot of that, and a lot of times where We'll have a program, we'll start a program, and the kids are doing really well. And we say, you know, maybe you could just go to a sports complex and the kids could play in just a sports class. Well, they would look different from everyone else. And yes, that's going to happen, but it's going to happen the rest of their lives. And the kids don't care. The kids just want to play. But the parents are holding that back. So we face a lot of that. And a lot of times what we'll do is I'll have them come into the building that I work in over on West Henrietta Road. I work at the CP Rochester buildings where my office is. Connected is a preschool, and it's a fully inclusive preschool. So we have kids with and without disabilities. And the funny part is the kids don't know the difference. You know, they're just, that's just going to preschool, and this is my friend. And so we give that perspective, let the parents see that and go, okay, maybe we'll let them try. And so there's also the side of not wanting to participate in the mainstream sports, if you will, but the adaptive sports especially, because then they're seeing full sight, you know, this is it for my child. They're not going to outgrow this.
Okay.
And that fear is really tough to face.
And then what about adults who get a diagnosis who might want to re-sort of ignite some sort of activity or sport that they used to play, but that does come with a recognition that life has changed, and so that may involve a hesitation to get involved in an adaptive sport. Does that happen?
Absolutely. And I think our two athletes here put it best, of it's just going to be different. That's it. And you just give it a try, and you're going to have to relearn some things. You know, I gave the example earlier of Jen breaking the ski. That's because when she started, she wanted to go straight down the hill like a speed a racer. You know, and that's not how the sit skis operate. We had to reteach her. You know, we have to turn and we have to do this. But now she's excelling at it, you know, and one of our best skiers in the program, if not the best skier in the program, because Dave was probably close on her heels, but he left. So
he
went to
went
to the hockey side. So
he went to the dark side. Huh?
So you got to relearn some things. And it's easier to say than to do. But the beautiful thing is you can still be active and have those life benefits of being outdoors or being indoors and being active.
Jen, can you talk a little bit about
that? Yeah, for me, I look at it as what were the opportunity we have as a family. And so I grew up in a ski family. Like, yes, I was competitive, but my whole family was competitive, and they were all skiers. And my family was going on ski trips that I couldn't participate in. And I now have two brothers that have learned how to ski with my adaptive skiing, and they take me out, and I get to be a part of the family and out on the hill with the family. And so, yes, does it take some humility to say that it's going to look different and that I'm going to need help? Yes, but I get to be a part of my family's life, and I get to go and do something active with my daughter that I never got to do before. And the Shared Skiing Solution is such a great place for my daughter to be, so that she can not only sees that her mom, who has very limited capabilities, can do something, but she sees other people with different limitations, and she sees the joy that can still be part of their lives.
It's awesome. And, you know, Michael, to some degree, once we get past our physical prime, which is a short window anyway, and in most sports, it's maybe your early to mid to late 20s, the rest of your life, you can't do what you were doing when you were younger anyway. You can do some approximation of it, but we're not in a physical peak for decades and decades anyway. And so what Jen can do as a skier is very different than the downhill skiing she did when she was in college, when she was in high school. But even if you hadn't had a diagnosis of MS, you probably, almost certainly, would not be the same caliber of downhill skier when you were growing up, right?
Right.
So it's different. I mean, it's the same to me. I remember last summer, I grew up, I was a pitcher in baseball into high school. I wasn't anything good, but I was at a baseball game this summer, and they had a speed gun. So I said, I haven't thrown a fastball in a while. I'm going to go uncork one. And I told the guy, I said, your gun is broken. Yeah. I threw my arm out, and the first pitch came in at 58. And I went, 58 what? What are you measuring this in? Three pitches, I almost tore a rotator cuff, and I was throwing no more than 60. I mean, that was nothing close to what I could used to, and I couldn't believe it. You know, and so it's just different. If I actually wanted to play baseball again, I couldn't be, you know, the same player I was 20 years ago. So there is change that's natural, and then there are changes sometimes that's more abrupt from an injury or a diagnosis. But I do think it's important, and I think it's beautiful in many ways, listening to Jen and Dave and what Michael does in accepting that and then still grabbing onto these opportunities and loving that. So as we get ready to close the hour, I'll ask Jen, you know, you talked about looking for some summer stuff. How about cycling or other things? Have you thought about what you want to do?
So for me, I have very bad fatigue, and with MS, the heat actually makes the disease worse. And so what I do some stuff in the pool for that. And so I'm kind of looking at, I want to look at water skiing.
Water skiing. Wow. And is that in your world, Michael Coquite, or is water skiing a possibility?
Absolutely. We don't do it because there's a place in actually in Canandaigua that does a phenomenal job. They just opened a few years ago, Roseland Wake Park. And it's this pond where they have a wire system where there's no boat. You just ride this cable all the way around the pond. And it's wakeboarding with jumps and all that, but they also do water skiing, and they have adapted devices as well for people of all abilities. So I would highly recommend Roseland Wake Park down there in Canandaigua.
Rochester Accessible Adventures is tweeting at us saying that love to hear Dave talk about inclusive pickleball, by the way. He and his wife make a fabulous team. We didn't even get pickleball in the discussion right under our last minute. You like pickleball?
You know what? 3 months ago, I had no idea what pickleball was. I love pickleball.
I do, too. I just started about 3 months ago, too.
Oh, wow. So yeah. You're going to same Rochester Accessible Adventures is what it is?
Yes. Yes.
And what's the short definition for people who have never played pickleball? What is it?
It's a combination between tennis and ping pong. So I don't know. You play it with an oversized ping pong paddle, and you use wiffle balls and over a tennis net.
Very good. Well, Rochester Accessible Adventures gave a little shout-out to you for your pickleball skill. And they also wanted us to know that kayaking and cycling at the Erie Canal Boat Company every day, June through September, and there's a clinic this weekend on sled hockey. So sled hockey clinics this coming weekend. Check out Rochester Accessible Adventures. Thanks, guys, for jumping into the conversation. Learn more about what Sportsnet is doing, and I know you want to grow, Michael Coquite, but where would people go online to learn more about what you're doing?
If you head to our website at sportsnetny.org, you'll see our events calendar, which has everything for the entire year 2018 up, and we'll be continuing to add to that calendar month to month as new events arrive.
Tonight, 6:30 at the Little Theater, it's the one-time screening for free of the documentary called The Rebound, and it's about wheelchair basketball. It's electrifying stuff. It's really inspiring, and the director is going to do a Skype Q&A following that, so enjoy that tonight at the Little Theater. Our thanks to the Al Siegel Community of Agencies and everyone associated with Dialogue on Disability Week. Michael, thanks very much. Thanks for the work that you do. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Jen, Dave, continued success to both of you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
Tim, Rob, Megan Mack, Evan Dawson, thanks for joining us. Talk to you tomorrow on Connections.